To order, and we are joined with the ABAG Administrative Committee. And Janice, could you confirm that we do have a quorum of the MTC Planning Committee?
Yes.
Okay. And Mark, do you want to?
Yes, we'll call to order the ABAG Administrative Committee, and we do have a quorum.
Okay. Thank you. I would like to ask if everyone would please join me as we do the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Yes.
Being prompted.
I would like to welcome one of our new commissioners, Joe Przinski. He represents the cities of Santa Clara County, and he's a council member and to the town of Los Gatos. And Joe, welcome. Did you have any inspiring comments for us this morning?
I don't know about inspiring, but I'm very happy to be here representing the cities of Santa Clara County. I'm excited to be able to participate.
Joe, turn on the mic. Yeah, there you
go. That was practice.
Go ahead.
Okay. I'm really happy to be here today. I'm also on ABAG, and I'm on the BTA Board of Directors. I'm the chair this year. And we've been doing regional work for a long time. I think the cities of Santa Clara County are very important to the region, and I hope I represent them well and participate appropriately with you in our regional mission. Thank you for having me today.
Okay, Joe. Well, welcome. I'm glad to have you here this morning. I do want to announce our compensation announcement that you'll be receiving $4 a meeting up to $20 a month. And what I've done is I've taken that $100 and at $500, and I've just, adjusted for inflation since 1971. And so so that $100 you're getting per meeting up to $500. Do not go out and buy a new car. So. But I just want to point out that we are all being compensated. The next item is the consent calendar. These are items that require little or no discussion. Is there a motion to approve? It's the minutes.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any dissent? Hearing none, that motion passes unanimously. Moving on to item four, this is the regional prosperity plan.
I assume our ABAG team needs to do the same for the minutes.
Move approval.
All those in favor? Aye. Opposed? Motion passes.
Okay. Thank you, Mark. The item four is the regional prosperity plan, and who's Doug? Are you kicking this off?
This is it.
All right. Let's go.
Good morning, board and commission members. Doug Johnson from MTC Planning, alongside Sailor Joe Corella from ABAG Planning. This is just a brief update on the HUD grant, which you were last briefed on in June. The ABAG Executive Board is actually getting a briefing on this next Thursday night. Since June, staff have worked with partners throughout the region to implement the work plan that's outlined in your memo. This afternoon will be the third steering committee meeting. The steering committee includes three ABAG and three MTC board members. We have commissioners Sparing, Campos, and Cortese from MTC, alongside executive board members Haggerty and Pierce. ABAG is set to assign a replacement for their third seat. Alongside them are a mix of agency staff and nonprofits. The full list is outlined in attachment 2 of your memo. Today, staff are recommending, in keeping with HUD's expectations of shared decision-making in this planning and grant-making effort, that MTC Planning and the ABAG Administrative Committee delegate subgranting project selection and funding solicitations to the steering committee as outlined in, as I mentioned, the roster outlined in your attachments. Staff will continue to bring updates to this body, especially as we increasingly have materials to share with you. And staff will also be bringing, just for administrative purposes, these recommendations to MTC's admin committee so that we can enter into funding agreements with them. If you have any questions for Sailor or I, please let us know.
Are there any questions for staff? Okay. Thank you, Doc.
I think on this we do need an action on this to approve the delegation.
Okay. Is there a motion?
So moved.
We have a motion and a second. There's further discussion? Hearing none. Is there any dissent? Okay. Thank you, Doug.
And we'll do the same. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
A motion and a second. All those in favor? Aye. Opposed? Motion passes.
Very good. Thank you. Let's move on to item number five. This is the regional PDA program and transit-oriented affordable housing, the TOA fund. And Ken, are you going to kick this off? Okay. Marion and Ken, okay, that's a good team.
It's a good team, and it gets even better because Brian Prater, the TOA fund manager, will join us again. So it's kind of like speed dating this morning for this presentation. And Miriam is going to kick things off.
Good morning. We're going to provide you an overview of the regional planning programs. I brought a similar presentation to the full ABAC board at the November meeting, and we had a similar discussion at the regional planning committee in September. So this builds upon that. It brings a few more details. Our regional planning program today has been built upon multiple efforts over the last decade and a half, and we want to remind ourselves
of... I'd like to invite the mayor. Gene, were you going to join us here today? Okay. Go ahead. Why don't you come back?
I was getting started with an overview of the efforts that have preceded or that have supported the regional planning program as we have it today over the past decade and a half. As you see on this slide, in 1998, the Transportation for Livable Communities program was created. In 2005, MTC developed the Transit-Oriented Development Policy, and in 2007, ABAC and MTC jointly developed the focus program that provided the framework that we use for the sustainable community strategies, the priority development areas and the priority conservation areas. As you know, those are proposed and adopted by local council resolution and then approved by the ABAC board. So, with that framework, there are three major implementation programs that we wanted to describe for you today: the PDA planning grants, the Smart Growth Technical Assistant, and the transit-oriented affordable housing. Let me start with the PDA planning grant program. The main effort here has been to really strengthen the connection between transportation investments and land use planning. It has been to support the local jurisdictions in their efforts to do comprehensive planning and move beyond the project-by-project efforts. So by having neighborhood plans, we support the entitlement process, we support the private investments, we minimize the expenses in getting specific projects ready. So towards that end, this planning grants have supported the development of the programmatic EIR, again, towards getting those places ready for private investment that will allow the production of housing, the expansion of jobs, and the implementation of services as needed. We have also, through this process, allow the exchange of knowledge addressing very specific challenges. As you know, through the SES, but behind that, there are a lot of changes in our small cities, medium-sized cities, and large cities. We're trying to be more efficient in the use of our land, in the use of our infrastructure, and there are all kinds of new challenges in dealing with infill development. So through the PDA planning grant program, ABAC and MTC has convened the grantees to highlight and to flag what are some of the crucial challenges that local jurisdictions are dealing with across the board. What are some of the successful cases that can be used and replicated in other neighborhoods? So in twice a year, we have those workshops and bring some specific expertise to address and discuss and support some of the planning efforts that are taking place in our region right now. There are a number of planning programs right now, PDA planning grants. We have completed a number of those across different cities. The first one was downtown Cloverdale, really small scale, but a lot of thought into how that community wanted to pursue future development and what were the qualities that wanted to retain. Similarly, Santa Rosa, San Leandro, Pittsburgh, Bay Point, San Pablo, San Mateo, North Fair Oaks, and a few others. There are also of different scale, but equally important, some of the planning process that are underway. San Jose Dearborn Station is close to completion. Walnut Creek is in the middle of the process, downtown Walnut Creek. Lake Merritt has completed a major component of the plan, but is still some more work to do. So overall, if we can go, we have awarded 52 plans across the various jurisdictions and a total of 18, more than $18 million. That is providing planning and zoning and environmental review for about 44,000 housing units. So in those 52 plans, that's the total of housing that could be accommodated. About 60,000 new jobs and 24 million square feet of commercial development. In these plans, there are different components. The regional agencies, in discussions with the local jurisdictions, have developed a template that allows for the realization of the local vision in connection with the regional objective. Some of the components of the plan are flagged in this slide: affordable housing, pedestrian design, infrastructure budget, multimodal access. There are several other components, such as market assessment, community engagement, that again have been developed over these 7 years, and it will allow the completion, or it will allow us to achieve our regional objectives at the same time that we accommodate and allow for specific local plan implementation. I'll now pass to Ken to continue with this description.
I'm going to touch on one of the early neighborhood plans that was completed. It was in San Leandro. Back in 2007, the city of San Leandro received a grant from what was then known as the Station Area Planning Program. It came to be known as the Downtown San Leandro Transit-Oriented Development Strategy. It really served as a model for this program. It had a very involved, robust community engagement process. A lot of local citizens got involved, neighborhood groups, the Great Communities Collaborative at the regional level, as well as regional agency staff working with the city staff and the consultants. The strategy established a land use framework for the area, a very comprehensive circulation system, design and development guidelines going forward, and a series of implementation actions, including a very well-developed, I think, programmatic EIR, which is proving useful today as things commence. To encourage development in the downtown, 39 opportunity sites across 88 acres were identified, where development could occur by 2030. And the plan calls for approximately 3,400 new housing units, over 700,000 square feet of office space, and over 120,000 square feet of retail space. Here you have a shot of what it pretty much still looks like right now, but that's going to change soon, which is the good news. Here you begin to see what happens as the plan is implemented, some of the changes taking place. And here is what it will look like as the plan is fully implemented. Like a lot of areas in the region, development was slowed by the recession, but the good news is it's about to take off. In 2013, probably May or June. Construction is going to commence on a 200-unit workforce rental development with retail services and other amenities on the on-site BART replacement garage with 300 spaces, and on phase one of the OSI Soft Technology Campus. That's a high-tech firm that's based in downtown San Leandro, and they're now growing, and they're going to kick off on a six-story office building as part of the neighborhood plan. Another program that we've had underway for the past 3 to 4 years is the Smart Growth Technical Assistance Program. This is really geared to tipping point projects, small projects that can really jumpstart development in a PDA, and projects that can also serve as examples for other PDAs in the region. Up to $60,000 in consultant assistance. We have a pool of consultants we pull together. They're available to assist jurisdictions. It's on an on-call basis, so there's not a huge application process for local jurisdictions. When they need assistance, we can provide assistance. There's a range of eligible projects, parking, development, feasibility. Those have been the two most sought-after types of projects. We've also had infrastructure studies, multifamily design guidelines across a range of communities. There was a development feasibility project in Sassoon City, parking demand study for Oakland as well as El Cerrito. Downtown Martinez has had an infrastructure study, and Marin County has developed multifamily design guidelines using this program. What you see in the illustration on the slide is related to the Berkeley project that analyzed the extent to which new development could contribute financial resources to support public benefit programs, and this has been used as part of the voter-approved downtown area plan in downtown Berkeley, and it's now being used to help implement that plan. With that, I'm going to ask Brian Prater, the TOA fund manager, to come up and speak about the TOD Affordable Housing Program that MTC provided initial seed funding for a few years back, and give you a sense of where the TOA program is at.
Great. Thanks. And thanks for having me today. As Ken said, my name is Brian Prater. I'm the managing director for the Low Income Investment Fund, and we're a community development financial institution, a 501c3. And we're basically an aggregator of capital. We provide technical assistance. We're a mission-driven type lender, and we manage funds like this. We happen to be based here in San Francisco in the Bay Area, but we're a national organization, and I'm representing a consortium of six similar organizations that were selected through a competitive process to be the fund manager for the program. With that, I want to talk a little bit just about the basics of the program and then get into an update of it. As you can see from the slide up here, it's a $50 million revolving loan fund, and all of the projects that we're going to be funding with this fund will be in priority development areas, and we will be looking at the quality of transit within those PDAs that each project has is accessible. We have five loan products. We predominantly, the fund, as you'll see as I go through some of the priorities of the fund, it's about affordable housing, but it's also, there's some mixed income possibilities there, and also mixed use, of course, which is very important near transit. One of the things when we closed the fund, we're still a toddler. We're not yet 2 years old, but we closed it in March 30th, 2011. And during that process, we created a business plan with all the fund partners, and of course MTC and our other partners in this room are at the table for that. So we really kind of defined, we used that opportunity to define how the fund would be governed, and what our goals and objectives would be. This is a 10-year fund with a 5-year origination period, so we're not quite 2 years in to our 5-year origination period. I wanted to just share this slide to talk about all of the partners that made this possible. And you can see the middle of that slide, I talked about the CDFIs, the consortium. They're all listed there. They all have offices in some portion of the Bay Area. But, you know, the top piece, I think, is really one of the very important ones. And that was the $10 million provided by the MTC and the leadership that MTC showed during the whole formation of the fund, feasibility, et cetera. And then the Great Communities Collaborative, which is an initiative that the San Francisco Foundation, the Silicon Valley Community Foundation, East Bay Foundation, a lot of others really contributed to. So there was a lot of visioning and planning that was done before the creation of this financial tool. And it was really led and orchestrated by those organizations. So I wanted to just give you a little idea of the composition of the fund. And so if you look at number three in the cylinder, you'll see the $10 million from MTC. And then as you look up and you see the foundation and CDFI, portion of the cylinder, and then the senior loan portion of the cylinder, you'll see that the $10 million that MTC provided really allowed, what it did was it allowed us to leverage another $40 million and create the $50 million fund. So we have lots of different types of organizations in there, you know, including if you look at the middle of the cylinder, we were able to get the Ford Foundation, which is, of course, one of the largest national foundations that we work with. And also Living Cities, which is kind of a portal, a philanthropic portal to a lot of the major foundations and banks in the country to give us what are called program-related investments. And then we were, by doing that and by designing the fund and sharing some risk, we were able to also entice some banks and some private sector capital into the fund. And you'll see that they're about half the fund. They're about $25 million of the fund. Morgan Stanley and City Community Capital. So the $10 million that the MTC provided was just a great catalyst, and how we were able to structure the fund, it allowed us to really leverage all this other money and create a much bigger pool and a revolving pool. So when loans come back, you know, we can give them to another project and create something that's going to last for 10 years and hopefully more. I mentioned our business plan, and through our business planning process, you'll see that we came up with these three priorities. And I mentioned affordable housing, so 85% of all the fund capital needs to go towards affordable housing. We thought, and some of our partners thought, and we talked to some developers, other stakeholders, cities, counties, etc., we thought that a portion of the fund capital should also be available to do things like child care centers and things that would support some of the affordable housing and support some of the families in the neighborhoods and in the corridors in which we're working. The third point, too, I think is one that's important, especially for this group. During the business planning process, what we did is we made a commitment to geographic diversity. And so what we're trying to do with the fund over the course of our five-year origination period is when we find the projects, you know, it's not just going to be about one or two places. We're committed to try to make sure that as many communities as we know across the nine-county Bay Area benefit from the fund. Our loan products, just a little bit, these loan products were designed really to support our priorities. So affordable housing, community facilities, fresh foods, etc. I won't get into a lot of specifics here, but you'll see from one of the slides that's following, we can do a lot of different things with the fund. And again, this is one of the outcomes of all the interviews and all the discussions that we had with folks around the Bay Area about what was really needed to kind of do these projects, because these projects, you know, I think as we all know in this room, can take a little bit longer than just your standard housing project. There's some complexity there. They're big, they're complex, and it takes a while to arrange some of the financing. And so really when we were creating the fund, we wanted to make sure that we had products that allowed developers and some of our other partners to really get these projects done and were responsive to their needs. And so, you know, we have acquisition, pre-development, construction, and then, of course, leverage loan product. I won't get into a lot, but it's really the how you do fresh foods markets, how you do child care centers and community facilities that would complement all of the housing that we hope that we're able to accomplish in the 10-year fund.
The mini-permanent, what does that mean?
Mini-permanent means it, you know, so if you think about a child care center, a child care center is constructed, and then they're up and operating, and then they need kind of a longer-term loan while they're operating that they can pay back incrementally during that period. Okay. So it's a longer-term kind of permanent, mini-permanent type of loan.
Gotcha.
Post-construction. So I wanted to give you an update here. We're a toddler. We're almost 2 years into our five-year origination period, and you'll see we've done a selection of projects there. We've got four that have closed and one that's approved. About $20 million or a little over 40% of the funds going to be deployed. And we've got a pipeline of another $25 million or so, and that that's growing. And so I think over the next couple years, we'll see that grow significantly, depending on what happens, which I will explain in our next slide. So this, I'm not going to go over, thankfully, I guess, to everybody in the room, every line on this slide, but I did kind of want to give an example, just to highlight what the role of the TOA Fund is and kind of where it fits into the larger affordable housing financing system. So you'll see I just listed, you know, the three general phases of a real estate development project: acquisition, construction, and permanent. And, you know, the five loans that you had seen that the TOA Fund had done to date were really acquisition loans. So it was, you know, helping a developer acquire a site, hold a site so that they could get into construction, hopefully within the next, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years or so. And so you'll see highlighted there the TOA Fund loan of $1.3 million in this example comes in early. That is a place where banks typically are not comfortable, especially when you get to a longer-term loan, so it fills kind of a great market gap. But, you know, the TOA Fund solves that problem, but, you know, I highlighted the public sector participation there in red in both the acquisition and the construction phases just because I wanted to be really clear that the TOA Fund doesn't solve all the problems. We still need, you know, some public sector money. You know, if you think about what went on with the RDAs in the past couple of years, I mean, in those red lines, that's where that money would be. So really, you know, incrementally building TOA, but also paying attention and knowing that it's part of the solution and not all the solution. We're really dependent on some of these other sources from public sector dollars and having strategies that really complement that to make sure that some of these other dollars are available to help, you know, really get the projects that the TOA Fund tees up, kind of moving them into construction and getting them done is also important. So it's really a holistic strategy that we have to look at, with the TOA Fund being a really important part of it, but not all of it. Thank you.
So this is staff's presentation. This is information. It's based upon questions that have come up at recent committee members from committee members, trying to give you a sense of background of where we're at. We'll be bringing forward a recommendation to your next meeting in terms of the regional planning funds relative to how they should be addressed. I think you know, Brian's last point is key. We're also going to be bringing forward an advocacy recommendation for how Plan Bay Area might actually be implemented. And the red categories up above are key. Housing related to transportation is obviously central to the plan. And while we have some very good programs here, we have some big gaps in terms of what needs to happen, as you know, at the local level to get housing built in priority development areas well served by transit. So with that, we'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Okay, thank you. You know, before I take any questions, you know, I'd like to introduce the mayor of Oakland. Gene Kwong is here with us today, and I want to welcome you. And obviously, you have some influence at City Hall. You got the mayor to appoint you. So a little humor there. With that, Gene, welcome. I don't know if you had any comments, but it's good to have you here today and with the commission.
No, but as you know, Oakland and San Jose for a long time wanted designated representatives, so we're both pleased, I'm sure, to be here. Thank you.
Okay. Good. Well, you're certainly welcome. Jim. With that, I'd like to open it up to questions.
Yeah, just one question. Appreciate the presentation. Is there a comprehensive set of guidelines that applicants look at, and where would we find those with regard to the TOA Fund that exists today, and where are they?
Yeah, absolutely, we do. We have, when the program was started, we developed a website, BayAreaTOD.com, and
I'm
BayAreaTOD.com, and it's got a ton of information about the fund, and it also has profiles of all the projects that we've done. And it has guidelines and really a lot of information, both for partners and for folks who want to apply for a loan from the fund.
Right.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Amy.
Yeah. First of all, I really want to thank you all for that presentation. Having just gone through a 15-year process in our community to create an affordable senior housing project, I understand when you say these projects are often long-term and challenging. And actually, we started with the land that the city owned, so we kind of were, we probably would have been 30 years. Mm-hmm. But I guess I had a question for you, and that's why I can see this particular chart where you identify the various sources of money is really helpful to understand. And I guess what I heard you saying, I wonder if you might amplify either using one of these projects as an example of how it's how the TOA money then, I assume it's sort of tied to milestones, and you're working with a a project, whether it's a city or a developer, to say, okay, this is a site we've identified, we need to acquire it, and then longer term, so you're relatively sure that that TOA investment then will result in actually the construction of a project and how that process works. And the other thing is, what can we do to bring in more more banks and foundations from around the country to help us with this incredible challenge in California, given land costs, given population pressures, and the demise of redevelopment? Sort of two
right.
questions, if you might be able to amplify, that'd be helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. So whenever somebody brings a potential project, a developer brings a potential project to the TOA fund, in our governance structure, we do have a credit committee. And so we'll look at that transaction and kind of look at the milestones. We ask for milestones and kind of a plan, like during the next year to 5 years, what milestones do you expect to hit, and when do you expect to hit them? And so we know that we don't have any kind of what we would call committed takeout sources, but we want them to identify kind of a pathway and help us feel comfortable that all the assumptions they're using to make sure, both from a planning perspective and a financing perspective, that we feel good that during that time period of the loan, the project will be developed. And we have at least annual and sometimes more check-ins. I think the good news about this is that the CDFIs, including us that I had mentioned, I mean, we've worked in this space so long. We have such deep relationships with all the developers throughout the nine counties that we have a pretty good feel for, if something's going to be realistic or if it's not, and we have a pretty good relationship to get updates from them. So, and we will assess, ongoing, has something changed? What are your plan B, that kind of thing. So it's an actively managed a process from that perspective. I do think that one of the things that probably isn't said enough about the Bay Area is that we are kind of ahead of the country on looking at this kind of stuff. And so the national foundations and some other national players, they do have their eyes here on the Bay Area. And so that made, when we were raising capital for the fund and when we're doing other things to try to support equitable TOD, raising money for the GCC, and some of the innovative things the GCC is doing, I think, relative to other regions in the country, we're going to have a little easier time because of that. I think that Ford and Living Cities and all of their members are very pleased with, so far, how the TOA funds went, and I think that a lot of those would be willing to participate as we grow the fund further.
Okay, Tom, Mayor Bates, and then Mayor Kwong.
Thank you very much. So Tom Bates, representing the Alameda County City. So I think this is a very exciting program, and I'm very, very pleased to see that we were able to actually take the $10 million and leverage another $40 million, which is fantastic. So my concern is that as we move forward, we have made a decision to give the CMAs an opportunity to do planning around the PDAs. So that planning is going to take place in the next, well, right now and in the future. But it's, you know, it's going to take a couple of years by the time you do an EIR, by the time you make a determination. It seems to me that one of the things that we really need to look at is have the ability to actually, before the land costs go way up, is to actually move in and actually acquire sites that would be land banked for the opportunity for low-income housing. Because if we don't do that, by the time it gets planned and it gets done, then there's no opportunity at that point for low-income. It's priced itself out of the, potentially out of the market. It's not going to happen all the time, but I mean, for the most part. So my concern is that we're going to be making a decision next month about how we're going to allocate some of the funds. And my question and concern is, if we were to make a substantial, say, $10 million or $20 million, take the whole $20 million into this fund, could you see the similar kinds of leveraging that we've seen in the past? And do you think that's still available to be able to leverage? If we put 20, could we, you know, see that go by the same kinds of denominators that we've seen in the past?
Yeah, absolutely. I do. I think that, you know, if you look at all the players that we have in the fund currently, I do think they really have liked what they've seen, and I think the banks will definitely be there, and I think there'll be more banks than just Citi and Morgan that would want to come in. And I also think we get the foundation support and potentially some additional foundation support. The other big piece of capital in there that I didn't really talk about, didn't want to be self-serving about it, of course, is the CDFIs. So we put in a bunch of money as well. And we did that, and we identified some other sources to prepare us for the growth of the fund in the future. So we could have done it all ourselves, but that would have been a fairly short-sighted strategy because we only have a certain amount of capital we can dedicate towards any given thing. And so what we did is we brought in a lot of other partners and so to preserve the capital so we could also be ready to put in for another $50 million or whatever we can raise. And we do. And for the CDFIs, we've caucused, and we do have that available. So I think we could pretty quickly identify the leverage that would be needed to double the fund.
Great, because I see a lot of the construction and the permanent components, the market itself, you know, is more likely to help in those areas. And it's the acquisition that is the real problem. And if we don't move, we're actually missing the boat because we're not going to ever see it happen.
Yeah,
so thank you for coming.
Great, thanks. And the one thing I would say, though, when I talked about the comprehensive strategy, the constraint I don't think will be within the fund itself. I mean, we will be able to leverage up the fund. It will be in those two red areas, the public sector grants and really the soft loans. That's the complementary strategy. Those are the dollars that really fill the gaps and make the projects work. And so, you know, a two-prong strategy. We have to make sure that those dollars are there because it'll be a back end and a permanent financing constraint, I think, that we have to, as an industry and as a region, deal with.
Chair Spearing, if I may, there's one point that I think we should touch on before we move on relative to Commissioner Bates' question. When we come back with a staff recommendation, one of the things that we'll need to focus on is that these are transportation dollars, and there's a limit in terms of how much money can be exchanged for this purpose, and it probably isn't $20 million. I mean, that's one of the things we just have to look at. There's a limitation in terms of how much money we can exchange to put into this program. The second is that, as you know, a substantial amount of funding went to the CMAs to do planning funding in support of PDAs, and assuming that much of that money is used for planning grants, it will go quite a ways toward moving potential PDAs to planned status. But with that funding, it still doesn't get the region there. There are nearly 80 potential priority development areas at this point in time. These grants have been between $500,000 and $700,000 a piece. So I think it's important to keep in mind when we look at this that we need to move forward on all fronts. That's how this has really worked well. We've had something that's been synergistic between planning neighborhoods as complete communities, really trying to advance land use goals and transportation objectives at the same time. And as Brian was saying, the red lines on the screen are really important. That needs to be an important emphasis of MTC and ABAG, working with CMAs, working with local jurisdictions going forward. TOA could get bigger and bigger, but if those holes, those gaps aren't filled, there's an awful lot of projects that cannot happen because they're missing a critical piece of the funding pool.
Yeah, I would concur in that, but at the same time, I would hope that the staff would give us the maximum potential that we could put in with, and still be in line with that. Because even though I agree that those public sector grants and loans are going to be hard to come by, because we're all strapped and all trying to figure out, but it's going to need some new policies. We're going to have to figure out some policies that are going to do that. Like, for instance, I mean, this isn't, there's lots of strategies, but one of which is when you have private sector for market housing built, particularly apartments, that you charge a fee, a fee that can be used per unit, that can be used to set aside to provide the funds for the loans and the grants. So it's the private sector could help feed that that thing, and then maybe some of the conversions from, you know, from units that are apartments to condominiums. Could be a fee, could be also, I mean, we're just going to have to be really creative. There's no doubt about it.
So I'm sorry, I missed part of the presentation. I just had a couple questions, and maybe you can just refer me to the website or the place if you already covered this. So it looks like you're saying that we've already appropriated about half of the money that you expect, another $25 million in the pipeline.
Yeah, there's $20 million that we've either committed or closed, and we have a pipeline of an additional $25 million. And some of those projects will move forward, and some of them won't, and some of them will be replaced. That's less certain, but they're at least probable enough to put on a pipeline.
And was there a criteria for giving out the money? It was like, so for instance, San Francisco got maybe three-quarters of all the first round of money. Was that because they were better prepared or they better met the criteria?
It's a first-come, first-serve. You know, when developers approach one of the CDFIs with potential projects, and we'll look at the projects, and the projects that are ready to go, that's how we'll prioritize funding, assuming they meet all the programmatic criteria that we've mentioned in the business plan. So they're affordable housing, they're child care, et cetera. So really it was, you know, project readiness, working with different developers. We do have, and we consistently get, we've looked at projects and are hoping over the next 3 years that projects in, you know, many in Oakland, many in San Jose, many in San Francisco, just because of population, but in all other places too. So we looked at stuff in Santa Rosa, San Rafael, and we're hoping that those projects do move forward. But there's a credit decision too, because it's a loan.
Come first serve. It's not like strategically this would be important for our overall transportation plan, or.
Well, it's the strategy overlay is that the binary decision that we have to make is that every project to access the fund has to be in a PDA. And so once it's in a PDA, we look at what the transit accessibility is, like how good the transit access is. We look at kind of we'll evaluate from a mission perspective what population the project's serving, you know, the area, you know, 60%, you know, tenants at 60%, 30%, et cetera. We'll look at all the different aspects of the project and see if from, a larger perspective, you know, does that project make sense from a mission perspective and then also from a larger strategic perspective.
So pretty much for the next phase, you have to be on the PDA grant list?
Your project has to be located in either a potential or a planned PDA. So if it's not in a PDA, it wouldn't be eligible for the program.
Okay. Then just a second question. With the planning grants themselves, you know, In the pre-Christmas hit by the Department of Finance at the state, a lot of us got our affordable housing staffing cut out of our redevelopment funding. So are they going to really be able to finish their planning? So I'm assuming some of those grants depended in my city, I'm sure. We were told affordable housing wouldn't be touched originally, but then they seized $40 million of our affordable housing funds. If I'd known, I would have spent it. No, really, I mean, based on the promises we got from the legislature. And then we thought it was strange that they put the funding for the staffing for affordable housing into the successor agencies and not kept it with the affordable housing agencies. But now the Department of Finance has ruled in a lot of cities across California that we can't fund our staffing for affordable housing now out of that funding either. So I'm wondering whether or not people are going to have enough staffing to do just even the minimum, much less planning for affordable housing, and whether or not that's going to affect all these PDA grants that we gave.
So, Mayor, I guess there's two answers. One is that in terms of the PDA planning grants underway in Oakland, we recently worked with Fred Blackwell to extend.
I just meant more generically.
To extend those grant deadlines, I think in part to address some of the staffing concerns. More specifically, we had, in looking at the overall PDA regional planning fund, staff had been looking at the potential of using some of the funding in cities that are taking on a lot of growth in the plan and are severely under-resourced as a way to potentially funding something along the lines of a rental planner that could really work on a specific set of objectives to implement the plan, but in a local community. The funding has been shifted a bit, but I think there's still an opportunity potentially to work with the congestion management agency and with the regional agencies to see if there might be a way to address that kind of need.
I just think we probably have to reassessment to make sure everybody who has a PDA grant can continue to go forward. Thank you.
Supervisor Hagerty, and then Councilman LaCarte.
Most of my questions were answered through the question. Okay. Right. Mayor Bates, if you can believe that.
Wow. Sam?
New Year.
On that collaborative note, I just wanted to ask about the swapping out, Ken, because I saw that in the report. We're dealing with federal dollars that are restricted for transportation. We're required to sort of swap out with local funds. What's the typical source of local funds that we'd be swapping in order to be able to move forward with these housing investments?
Commissioner, we've had a bit of a history on that question, and the first big source of funds we had was actually in your county, the original Santa Clara sales tax. We did a swap with them, and we lived off that clean money for some time. It was big enough that it actually earned interest over time.
I'm glad we could make you money, Steve.
So we are really in search of, and I'll make this a public plea, we're in search of another partner like that, because what we've been doing in recent years is fairly small deals with individual agencies on individual projects. And what we really need is something on the scale of, you know, $25, $50, $100 million so that we have these funds available not only for unusual uses like this, but there are all sorts of projects now that we do in the Bay Area that are not your grandfather's interstate project, right? Mm-hmm. And these small projects that we do run into the federal rule book, and they just get murdered. So it's really something I think that we need to work on a programmatic level, not only for TOA, but for a whole range of things, where we've got this huge mismatch between red tape and the kind of projects that we're doing.
Fair enough. And I imagine if, you know, we're successful with the state level with AB4, then there'll be lots of county measures with lots of funds out there to be doing some swapping.
Remember, the reason that this isn't so easy to do is that, you know, we want to get clean money, but not a whole lot of people want to get federal money.
Right.
In fact, in some cases, federal money trades at a discount, and we've tried to avoid that because we don't want to lose money in the transaction.
Right.
But we do have some partners, including BTA, with very large projects that are federally eligible. And that's really where you want to make the trade.
Great. That's informative. Thank you. Could I ask, regard to the LLIF, to what extent is there a lot of collaboration with local housing trusts in counties mm-hmm. like Santa Clara County mm-hmm. in terms of identifying how best to most efficiently use the dollars to build units?
No, great question. We see in the criteria that we develop for the program, we mandate a connection that the developers and the CDFI who's originating the loan, that they make the local connection and get a letter of local support from all of the local governmental entities there. I see the housing trust funds and all the others as great partners that would complement the TOA fund, because the TOA fund, the maximum loan size that we can do on an individual transaction is like $7.5 million or so. That's beyond a lot of what our local housing trust funds can do. And so I think the conversations that we have with those folks, as we will in San Francisco and other places, is, you know, how do we work together? Like, when you look at this particular project that has been identified strategically as a priority for that local government and that local community, how do we take all the different tools we have and all that you have and kind of make it work and complement each other? So whether it's, you know, the housing trust funds, they'll do some soft money. They can help fill those red lines. They'll do pre-development type loans, which are really nice additions to an acquisition loan the TOA fund could make. So I find it there's a lot of collaboration there. And it's one of the reasons why when you look at TOA and we created all of those different products, we were thinking that when we're collaborating with different folks around the region, some of those products would fit better in some projects and some in others. And so we wanted a lot of options and a pick list for people to have so we could fill the gaps that they didn't have the money for in that local community. So there's a lot of collaboration.
Yeah, I appreciate the emphasis on flexibility, because I know that affordable housing financing is very complicated and difficult, and especially now. So that's an important role. I had a good opportunity to talk with several members of the advocacy community and be able to take a closer look at the projects. I'm grateful for that information. Clearly, you're doing great work. These are great projects. This is critical work, and it comes at a critical time with the death of redevelopment agencies and exhaustion of Prop 1C money and everything else we're dealing with. So I think it's I fully affirm the mission. I guess I just want to reiterate my larger concern around what this agency, MTC, is doing. And really express a strong hope that regionally or at the state level, we're going to find means through tax increment financing or housing impact fees where we can really start to come up with real a source of affordable housing really commensurate for the need. We clearly don't have anything near that now. But I'm really concerned about mission creep of this agency. And, you know, we're spending a lot of time figuring out how to launder federal dollars that are targeted for transportation to serve what we all agree is a critical mission, but it's serving housing, childcare, retail at the ground floor, all the other things that we know are essential, and we're getting well beyond the expertise of this agency to be able to, even if LIF is an incredibly effective organization, these are public dollars and they need public monitoring, and I just don't think we're in the business of being able to understand how effectively we're being able to ensure that the investments we're making are the right investments for affordable housing or not. I think there's no question these are great projects. But, you know, we've got transit systems that are absolutely running out of money. And they've got chronic budgetary shortfalls. And we've got to respond to a public about how we're using dollars for the mission we've got. And so I look forward to seeing the success of this program over the next several years. I'm just hoping that there's going to be a state and regional solution that's going to take us out of the housing business, and so we can really focus our energies serving many of the same residents, but in our mission in terms of mobility.
Yeah, Sam, I want to thank you for those comments. I think that something that we have to keep in mind is that we don't lose sight of what our objective is here as a commission. And so, Mark Luce and then Scott,
I get mine is just trying to understand how this evolves. So what are the motivations of the banks to participate? What's the motivation? I mean, it's a great mission, but, you know, people need to feed themselves and that sort of thing. So what are the motivations to create the fund and participate in the fund?
From
in other words, how do you sell it to these folks?
To the banks and the foundations? I think what they're seeing in the Bay Area is a real opportunity to. We've got some of the infrastructure and some of the resources that are in place to really expand upon this type of work. And with the partnership with the foundations and the MTC, there's a way to share risk that makes the banks feel very comfortable, that they're doing something from a mission perspective, but they're also doing something that they can defend internally to their CEO, their credit folks, et cetera. So they feel good about what they're getting out of the program versus the risk they're taking in it. It's a lot of it on the bank part. You know, the Bay Area, LA, and New York City are probably the three regions that benefit the most from the Community Reinvestment Act, the Federal Community Reinvestment Act that mandates banks to give back. And we, I think, will banks invest in the TOA fund solely because of that? They won't. It's got to be a good structure. They've got to believe in the program, et cetera. But it's also it also is one of the factors that they look at. And in the Bay Area, there's a lot of investment that we can attract into different funds because there's not as many opportunities to invest that CRA money the banks need to invest wisely. So that's why I'm very comfortable that if we were able to get additional monies and leverage it, we would quickly be able to identify another $25 million.
So they do receive a return? It's not a donation to this organization?
They do receive a nominal return. Yes, they do get an interest rate. They are lenders to a fund, and they will get an interest rate back.
And eventually, presumably, returned, or is that...
That I negotiate.
Yes. So they will receive their capital back? I mean,
they will receive their capital back. This program's a loan fund, so the loans will come out, they'll repay, and at the end of 10 years, the money will be distributed back to where it came, including, you know, the MTC dollars. If we don't take any losses, I mean, the MTC dollars, that $10 million will be there. Okay. At the end of 10 years. It's not a grant program. It will be there to be, and we'll be able to make collectively decisions with what we want to do with that money at that time.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Sure. That'll be something new. Scott Weiner and then John Joyam.
Thank you, Scott Weiner, representing San Francisco. I want to associate myself with Commissioner Liccardo's comments. In particular, whether or not we're the best agency to be dealing with affordable housing issues, I've been seeing, I don't know if it's a trend because it's probably been happening for a long time, where transit money gets reallocated to other uses. I've seen it, and we've had some very big fights in San Francisco about this. For example, the school district stops the yellow bus program, so Muni is expected to subsidize that instead of finding another source. We see it in our transit impact development fees, where Muni is expected to subsidize large institutional nonprofit uses who are categorically exempted from paying a penny in transit impact fees. And I'm a huge supporter of affordable housing. I was active in the campaign for Prop C that created San Francisco's Affordable Housing Trust Fund. And I'm going to continue to be supportive. But I'm just very skeptical of efforts to take transit money to use it for other very worthy and important goals. And the challenge is that whereas a lot of other policy priorities tend to have very focused and effective I don't want to use the word lobbyists because sometimes they're, you know, they can be sort of community advocates who are lobbying, not necessarily in a paid way, but, you know, very focused constituencies that are advocating effectively for that funding. Transit doesn't have, for the most part, we have some great transit organizations, doesn't have the same level of focused lobbying, so to speak, because it's really what you end up doing. You divert money from transit, and then it just gradually over time degrades, and it's the diffuse public that pays the price. And so I want to thank Commissioner Liccardo for his comments because I agree with him.
Yeah, after John's comments, I'm going to take public comments.
I mean, I think these are all good comments. I do think, however, there's sort of a balance in all of this, right, that you know, with this era of limited resources, everybody needs more money, whether it's more for transit, you know, more for other transportation projects, affordable housing. I do think that, you know, given the policies of all the regional agencies, and especially MTC, to try to encourage more development in PDAs, oftentimes the cost of development in those areas and the infrastructure that you need to have that development is often more expensive than alternative forms of development that actually may be less beneficial to the environment, the sprawl development that has been out in open space areas. So in a sense, what we're doing is providing some funding, not a lot. You know, it's not going to be the big piece. It's still going to, other money is going to be needed. But to help make those projects happen under our own policies, they're encouraging development in these exact places where the construction costs may actually be more expensive, but that we're going to achieve greater environmental benefit, less vehicle miles traveled, and all those other great things we're trying to achieve. So it's a balance.
And you know, if you're going to sustain the transit system, it needs riders. And so this, the whole purpose of this is to put this housing where people will use the public transit.
That's right.
We have to always make sure that connection is very strong
as
we go through this process. And so with that, I'm going to take
it. It'll provide more support for the exact transit issues that all of us really want to support to get more ridership.
Okay, Steve, go ahead.
I'll just make it 2 cents because this is a much longer conversation, and I appreciate the concerns that both Commissioner Liccardo and Weiner have raised. At least in my view, this is not mission creep. This is an explicit move in this direction on our part, and I think you need to tell us whether you agree or not with that. I think housing can be a very effective transportation strategy. And in my experience, at least, in this region, we've built some transit projects that have not been all that effective. And if we're trying to deal with our transportation problems, traffic congestion as an example, that's a symptom of a housing problem. It's not something that is just as easy to deal with all by itself, because you'll be spending a lot of money building highway lanes and transit projects, and if you don't get at the underlying cause, which is the mismatch between housing and job and other locations, you're going to be spending yourself silly. And there's an argument I think you can make that that's precisely what we've done in the Bay Area. So I do agree that some notion of introducing this into our toolbox and using it in a balanced way and not doing it, as I think you fear, Commissioner, in a creeping fashion, but doing it explicitly and avowedly, I would put that into the mix for your consideration. I think a second point I would make is the leverage we're getting off of this money is something that's really attractive to me, because I spend most of my day getting leveraged by somebody else. And I think that is something you need to consider. When we undertook this particular project, our money is going an awfully long way. I probably share the chairman's skepticism that it'll all get recycled as planned. But putting $10 million and getting $50 million out the other end is a real payoff.
Okay, with that, I'm going to take public testimony.
Can I just make one brief comment, follow up on that? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to make really clear, I'm not transportation and housing are, and I'm sure we all agree, are two sides of the same coin. They're inextricably linked. You cannot make policy on one without thinking about the other, and I was not, and I'm sure Commissioner Liccardo was not suggesting otherwise. I think that the question is, if we start taking on more affordable housing, policymaking, funding, in my mind, whether that you start seeing more and more transit money moving in other directions, because we, as we do, whether affordable or otherwise, more transit-oriented development. I look at, for example, in the Market Octavia plan area in San Francisco, where we're putting a ton of new housing, including affordable housing, and it's great. It's perfect location for it. Our subway can't even accommodate the population there now, let alone adding another 10,000 people. And so if we start doing this beautiful transit-oriented development, but we've been taking money away from transit upgrades and maintenance and expansions, we're going to have a situation where it's not truly transit-oriented development, because those people aren't going to be able to rely on transit. So that's the point I'm trying to make in terms of prioritizing transit funding.
Okay. With that, Jeff Hobson. Jeff, thank you.
Thank you.
Happy New Year, commissioners, executive board members, staff, and everybody else. I'm feeling really relaxed. My name's Jeff Hobson with Transform. I've been a transit lobbyist, I guess one could say, for the past about 14 years. You can all judge for yourselves how effective we've been, but we've certainly tried to tell you what to do with your money, or our money. And I'm here today to applaud MTC and ABAG for the ways that you've been making what I see as terrific transportation investments over the past several years. I almost felt like just saying I second your executive director's comments, but I'm not quite that shy. I won't take that much of a page from Scott Haggerty's book today of just echoing Tom Bates. All three of the programs that you're discussing today are excellent transportation investments. The station area planning program is one that your own analysis showed a few years ago was the most cost-effective transportation investment that you were making. I can't remember, but I think it was hundreds of dollars, it was a factor of 100 or so better than a lot of the transit capital investments that MTC makes, because it puts riders in seats. It puts people, either residents or employees, steps away from places that they work, live, shop, play, whatever. The TAP program has been a great addition, helping cities take the steps needed to actually get projects move towards implementation. And TOA is kind of the ultimate expression of that in actually getting projects built. So these are transportation investments. They are not housing investments that don't do anything for transportation. They are transportation investments. They get transit riders onto transit systems, and they work. You know, Brian referred to the TOA Fund as a toddler, and I'd suggest that MTC's investments in land use linkages, whether that was the TLC program today in this trio and in through OBAG, are really some of MTC's most important babies, some of ABAG's most important babies. It's why I was out on sabbatical for the last 3 months, so I kind of missed a lot of the excitement of the fall. But I was surprised and, frankly, a little disappointed to see that it looked like these agencies took a page from King Solomon's book and decided to cut this baby in half back in November, cut it from $40 million to $20. So if you can't or aren't going to undo that decision, it seems it's vital to make sure that the $20 million that did go to the CMAs, that you provide some really good help to them in making sure that they administer that windfall so that it's as effective as these programs have been.
Thank you, Jeff. Yeah, I was hoping I was going to go through one meeting without that $20 million being raised, but that isn't going to happen. Kate White. Kate.
Thank you, commissioners and executive committee members, staff. Kate White with the San Francisco Foundation, and as was mentioned by Brian, we were not only helped catalyze, build the business case feasibility study for this for over many years before it was approved. The first $10 million was approved in March 2011, but we also are an investor ourselves. We're one of the when that stack was shown, we're one of the, through our endowment, we're actually investing in the fund through our investment pool. So we're hoping for the money back as well. And I wanted to thank you for your time on this issue today. I think Brian did a great job, and I just wanted to compliment him and the Low Income Investment Fund through the competitive bid process that we went through to select who should be the CDFI that should be selected to manage these funds. We clearly made the right decision with LIF, Low Income Investment Fund, but there's also, I wanted to talk about real quickly a couple issues. One is oversight, and two is this question of, is MTC the appropriate agency to be investing in this fund? So one, on oversight of the funds, As I mentioned, I have a great amount of trust in the low-income investment fund. They have bring, he can't toot his own horn, so I'm going to do it, decades of experience managing exactly these type of funds. But we also have an oversight committee that is meeting not only the credit committee, which he mentioned, which looks gets into the details of the loans and if what projects make sense, but we have this oversight committee, which I sit on, as well as Ann Flemmer, Ken Kirky, other of the CDFIs that are investors, and we make sure that the money is spent very well, highest and best use, and getting lots of leverage. So the second issue of MTC being the most appropriate organization in the region. This one drives me crazy because most other regions have one MPO. So I sort of think it shouldn't even be an issue. It's just how do we want to spend, let's get real, you know, our regional funds as a whole and prioritizing those well to advance all the goals that we have in the region. And most of the money, what is it, 90% of the regional dollars are at MTC. So I might be exaggerating that number a little bit, but
A little higher.
Okay, so let's talk about, you know, what, get real about where the money is and how we should be spending it. I think MTC is absolutely appropriate to be the investor in this fund because not only all the good reasons we've talked about, but they also have tremendous experience over, again, many decades managing very complicated infrastructure investments, financial programs, and so they're the ones to do it.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you, Kate. And, Kate, we are the only MPO in the Bay Area. So with that, Ken, you had said that there is a limit as to how much can be spent, and I'm sure there's going to be further discussion on what that allocation is going to be, and so we'll look forward to that discussion. Is staff going to come in with a recommendation?
Yes, we will in February.
Okay. All right. So is there any other burning questions on this item so we can move on? Okay. Well, thank all
thank
of you.
Chair,
thank you. Mr. Chair,
yes,
I just wanted to make a compliment to the San Francisco Foundation for really leading the efforts to put this together, and we really appreciate your efforts.
Thank you,
Tom. Ditto.
Okay. The staff doesn't have anything else to add on it. Public comments, I have no speaker cards. And so if there's no further business, this meeting's adjourned. Thank you. Good discussion this morning.